Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Welcome to If You Love This Planet. Today my guest is Dr. Maricel Maffini, a research assistant professor in the Department of Anatomy and Cellular Biology at Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston. Her research interests are in the field of carcinogenesis and developmental biology, and she's made a number of important observations in the field of breast cancer. Dr. Maffini is interested in understanding the association between exposures to environmental estrogen mimics during fetal life, like bisphenol A, a component in plastic, and breast cancer risk in adulthood. Dr. Maffini holds a PhD in biology from the National University of Litoral, Santa Fe, Argentina, and she's been awarded several fellowships, including one from the World Bank. In 2007, she was a fellow of the first Science Communication Fellow Program, sponsored by the non-profit organization Environmental Health Sciences. Dr. Maffini, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Dr. Panico.
Now, so let's talk about your beginnings. How did you get into this whole field of experimental biology?
I did my PhD thesis on prostate cancer, actually. In which molecular markers can be used as predictors of prognosis and how we can use also those markers to follow up the patient. And then when I came to the U.S. in 1999, I continued for a few more months working on the field of prostate cancer, specifically trying to understand how the cells in the prostate are controlled, at the proliferation is controlled by hormones. And then I slowly started moving into the field of specifically carcinogenesis. And we decided to study the breast because it's an organ that is easy to access to in laboratory animals. And it allows us to do a certain type of experiments that we were trying to do. And then because of the results that we obtained with the carcinogenesis project, we started looking at chemical compounds that have a hormone effect, compounds that mimic the action of the natural hormone estrogen, and how that could influence the induction or the disease, the presence of a breast cancer in an animal.
So let's go back to the prostate, because although I'm a physician, I don't really know how hormones or which specific hormones affect prostate cells. Can you walk us through that, please, Dr. Maffini?
Well, the prostate, the control of the prostate, of the growth of the prostate, is done by androgens.
Testosterone and the like.
That's correct. Testosterone and another one that is called DHP. So it's very interesting because during puberty, when the hormones start going up, there is a rapid increase in the size of the prostate. However, there is a point when the prostate stops growing and proliferation, the cell division, stops. However, the levels of hormones remain high. So there is a mechanism of shut off of the cell proliferation that androgens can promote the cells to divide or can promote the cells to stop. And it's a very fine mechanism. And hormones in general act in that particular way. It doesn't mean that the higher the hormone level, the higher the proliferation of the cell. They have sometimes a curve that is an inverted U-shape, in which you can have the same effect at a low level or at a high level of hormone.
Well, wouldn't that mean not necessarily the the hormone itself impacting the cells, but there must be a mechanism within the cell whereby at a certain hormonal level or whatever, the cell itself does not respond to androgen, to the hormone. Would that be right?
Well, what we see in animals and also with cells in culture is that you can increase the concentration, the amount of hormone, and the cells will proliferate until they stop.
Yeah,
they just shut off. Even though the androgen receptor is present and all the mechanisms that to respond to the hormone are there, the cells just don't proliferate. Now, when you put it in the context of the whole organ, there is so much communication that goes on between the cells, and every cell responds to signals from the neighbors, from the neighboring cells and from the environment where the cells live. So it is a very complex mechanism that I am sure that it's not just the hormone that controls it. And it's not just the one particular cell type that has been affected, but it's the combination of the prostate cells, the ones that make the prostate, the functional cells, and the environment where they live that is making the prostate to stop.
Right. So we don't really understand the mechanism whereby cells get stimulated and then they shut off to the effects of the hormone, right?
That's correct.
And so what influence then does estrogen have on prostate cells, Dr. Mafini?
Oh, estrogen in the prostate?
Yeah.
Oh, well, so many, many years ago was used as a therapeutic for prostate cancer patients. But it's not very clear what it does. Estrogens cannot bind to androgen receptors, for instance. A male has high levels of estrogen circulating, there is an imbalance between the amount of testosterone and estrogen, and this that male will become more feminine.
Yes. I've seen patients, male patients on estrogen, of course, who grow breasts and lose their bodily hair and become quite soft and feminized. But does estrogen in fact inhibit the growth of prostate cancer?
I don't have precise information about that.
Okay. So let's get into breast cancer and specifically the work that you've done and how did you get into bisphenol A, which is a part of one of the components of plastics and the effect upon breast cells and breast cancer. How did you start looking at that and why, Dr. Mafini?
This laboratory had, by chance, they found that certain plastic of the tubes, the plastic tubes that we used in the laboratory, were making cells, breast cancer cells, to proliferate like crazy. This happened many, many years ago. So this,
was that Dr. Theo Colburn who was
doing
the work?
No, that was Dr. Soto, Anna Soto.
Oh, yes.
So they found out that there was a chemical that was mimicking the estrogen. Therefore, these cells were proliferating. So then we became interested in bisphenol A because it's widespread. It's everywhere. We are constantly and chronically exposed to it. So we started studying the effect on the development of the mammary gland.
Mm-hmm.
So all our experiments are done with exposures during gestation. And some are done with exposure during gestation and lactation. But then we study the animals, the pups, that are not exposed to bisphenol A throughout the experiment. So what we saw first is that the mammary gland of these animals that were exposed only during gestation look completely different from the animals that were never exposed. So these were larger, they were longer, we looked at so many different times. We looked during fetal life. Those mammary glands are much larger than the non-exposed animals.
Mm.
We look at 1 month of age, that is approximately when mice start undergoing puberty.
Mm.
And those glands were also longer. The ducts were longer, more extended than the non-treated animals. At 6 months of age, these virgin animals look like the mammary glands were from pregnant animals.
Hmm.
Much later, at a year or 15 months of age, we see that the ducts, the mammary ducts, that are supposed to be hollow, like pipes, so they can conduct the milk, are closed. So there are cells growing inside these tubes, blocking the fluid. And those are signs of precancerous lesions. So a cancer develops when cells grow inside this pipe and block completely the lumen. And then it will continue growing outward. What we see in these mice is that they have what would be the beginning of tumors.
And that was just just the exposure at gestation and no...
That's correct.
Really?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And never again.
Wow.
And these animals were given... they are in a controlled environment where we know that they are not exposed to any other estrogenic compound. And we also looked at rats.
Mm-hmm.
And we see in the rats, we see a much more profound effect. These animals actually develop carcinomas in situ at very early age.
Really?
So these animals are 3 months old, and they develop carcinomas in situ.
Describe what carcinoma in situ means.
It means that if a woman is diagnosed with carcinoma in situ, she will undergo surgery to remove that. It will undergo a lumpectomy and most likely radiation after that.
But in situ means it has not spread and it's still in the duct.
It has not spread. That's correct.
It's still in the duct.
It's still contained in the duct.
Yeah. It hasn't spread into the breast tissue itself, just in the duct.
That's correct.
And the symptom of carcinoma in situ in a woman is often discharge from the nipple. Sometimes it's bloody, right?
Not necessarily, no.
It can be just a lump.
Yes. It's usually very small and it's seen with a mammogram. Mm. Sometimes can be palpable.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. It's smaller than what you can actually palpate during a routine examination.
Right, and you'd see that in the mammogram. Now, with the animals that develop carcinoma in situ in their ducts, then did that carcinoma spread in the rats?
No. No. They stay like that.
Oh. And tell me, Dr. Muffini, where do you get bisphenol A from? What plastics contain this bisphenol A?
Bisphenol A is the building block of polycarbonate.
Ah.
That hard, clear plastic that is used in many, 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 many products.
Like what?
like the reusable water bottles that people that go for hikes carry with them, those very colorful, very nice bottles. It is also in the glasses I'm wearing now, CDs and DVDs. It is also used in dental coating.
What coating?
Dental sealant and coating that is used to put on in young kids in their teeth to prevent cavities.
Really?
It is also, I don't know if in Australia you have the recycle symbol with numbers.
Yes.
It's all in all number 7 plastics.
Yes, that's on the bottom of the bottle. What about the plastic, clear plastic bottles that people buy water in and Coca-Cola and the like?
No, those are usually something called PET.
Yeah.
Those don't contain bisphenol A as far as we know. However, they do release some estrogenic compounds.
Are they the phthalates?
No, there is a very recent study from Germany that what they can identify only is if there is estrogenicity or not.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot identify the chemicals.
So you're saying that those plastic bottles of water that everyone carries around with them all the time and they drink from them all the time.
Yes.
Do contain estrogenic chemicals that mimic estrogen.
Yes. And more importantly, the interior of the metallic canned food, that epoxy resin is made with bisphenol A. So all your tomato sauce or apple sauce
or tuna
fish or any food that baby formula or baby food that comes in cans, all those contain bisphenol A. The lacquer that is used to coat the metal so it doesn't deteriorate contains bisphenol A that migrates into the food.
And you can measure it in the food?
Yes. There is a study that Health Canada did not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where they looked at, for instance, bisphenol A in cans of sodas, Coca-Cola and other
drinks.
Sodas, like
yes.
Drinks like that.
Yeah.
And they found measurable levels of bisphenol A. The highest level so far has been found in tomato sauce.
Oh, really?
On any food that is acidic.
Yeah.
That increases the migration rate of bisphenol A from the can.
Well, tomato sauce comes in plastic bottles as well. Is that true for the tomato sauce in plastic bottles?
I don't know. I haven't read anything about that.
It's only in tomato sauce coming out of metal cans, is it?
Yes. If the plastic contains any amount of bisphenol A.
Mm.
It is possible that the chemical reaction also takes place in the plastic and it will migrate out.
Well, what you're really saying, Dr. Mafini, is that almost all food that is packaged in plastics or in cans, almost all of it contains traces of bisphenol A.
For sure, all the food that is in cans, yes.
Yeah.
In plastic, it depends what is the plastic, the components of the plastic.
Yeah.
But, for instance, BPA is also used in the manufacturing of PVC pipes. So it is also found in tap water, when you open the faucet in your house or anywhere.
My God, there's no way to escape this stuff.
That's correct.
Well, then, what are the ramifications, implications of this? Bisphenol A, I assume, is found in the blood of nearly all people.
It was found, the latest study here in the U.S., of 2,500 people, it was found that almost 93% of them in the urine. The highest amounts were found in kids and in teenagers. And then in women, where the amounts were higher than in men.
Why is that?
Why is that? Probably lifestyle. But there are many speculations. What is also important is that, as I mentioned before, because it's, BPA and phthalates are used to make PVC tubing.
Yeah.
That is used in medical devices to administer drugs. Babies that are in the intensive care unit have 10 times more bisphenol A in the urine than adults walking on the street.
Oh, my God. So if you extrapolate from your rat and mouse experiments where they're exposed, well, this was at gestation, but very young, one would then assume that almost all people, I guess in the Western world anyway, who use current food products could develop similar lesions in their breasts?
It is possible. The consequences are, the link is very hard to prove because what happens when you are in your mom's womb, it will manifest when you are 45 years old.
Yeah.
So there is, and you are not exposed only just to BPA or to phthalates. It's the combination of chemicals as well. But there is, it is almost, let's say it's very, very hard to conduct an epidemiological study because you don't have a non-exposed population.
No, no.
So all the studies that are done correlate the amount of chemicals found in the urine with certain diseases. For instance, last year it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that there is a positive correlation between the amount of BPA in the urine and diabetes and heart disease.
Really?
Yeah. And they looked at all over 1,400 American adult population.
And they measured the bisphenol A in their urine?
That's correct.
But of course, they could have been exposed much earlier in life, which would be producing the diabetes at that time.
Yes. What we are seeing in animals is that the animals cannot regulate their body weight. They tend to be obese.
Oh, really?
They have also altered, they cannot regulate sugars very well.
Yeah.
So some of the males are diabetic. The brain is altered. The male brain, it looks pretty much like the untreated animals. However, the female brain, the brain of females exposed in utero to BPA, look like a male brain.
Really?
Yes. And they have also behavior that is comparable to the male behavior.
So I don't understand that if it's an estrogen mimicker.
It is an estrogen mimicker.
Yeah, well then why would you develop male characteristics in the brain instead of female?
In rodents, the male brain needs very minute amount of estrogens to develop.
Yeah.
And that estrogen is produced locally in the brain by converting testosterone into estrogen.
Yeah.
Because there is no circulating levels of estrogen during gestation in rodents.
Yeah.
Now, the female rodents don't need the estrogen in the brain. But when you have estrogen circulating, now that estrogen is acting on the brain like if it were a male brain.
Oh. What about, I know there's been a literature in the pediatric publications to postulate that very early menarche are in little girls, in other words, developing puberty early, breasts and periods.
Yes.
Is associated with these estrogen mimickers in the diet. Talk about that, Dr. Maffini.
Yes, there is a recent study that review some data from 1940s to 1999, and it was published in 2008. And yes, specifically, all the reviewers agreed that there is a trend toward an earlier breast development onset and menarche in girls. It's not clear in boys, however. And their recommendation is that this is something that we should be very concerned about, because altered puberty timing could be considered an adverse effect, especially when you look at breast cancer incidence, when early menarche is considered one of the risk factors for breast cancer.
So we're talking about several pathological implications of these plastic derivatives in our food. One is early menarche.
Yes.
One is obesity.
Yes.
One is diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
One is heart disease.
Yes.
And the other one is breast cancer.
That's correct. Some other researchers have also looked at prostate, and they see an increase in prostate cancer risk. We are also seeing altered behavior at the level of hyperactivity.
Oh, yeah?
And obsessive behavior. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
What, is this in your rodent population or humans?
In rodents.
So you're seeing hyperactivity in the rodents who have been exposed to bisphenol A
during gestation and lactation.
And, well, how can you tell that a rodent, a rat or a mouse, has obsessive behavior?
Well, it would be very nice if I can send you a little video clip. I will try to do my best to explain it to you. The rodent, for instance, runs around in circles for hours on the cage. Or it's flipping backwards for probably 45, 50 minutes at a time, and then it rests 5 minutes and it continues flipping backwards in circles.
And this is male and female rodents?
Yes. And then they also hop on the same spot, up and down, up and down, up and down for hours. And you can see that there is a littermate sitting next to them doing nothing, and is very large. So it's a very complex syndrome that we are
You mean
seeing.
This littermate is obese?
That's correct.
Ah, but doesn't display the obsessive behavior.
That's what we are trying to understand.
We
are looking at the brain, at different levels of the brain, and we are collaborating with people that are interested in those diseases and hyperactivity disorders and autism and things like that. So they are looking at very specific areas of the brain.
So what happens with children who have obsessive behaviours and hyperactive and autistic? Of course, they get drugged.
Yes, usually yes.
The ramifications of the work you're doing, I have to say, are extremely profound, aren't they?
Yes, considering how much we are exposed to it, yes. When you have an organism that is being developed,
yeah,
anything that you touch, it will be affected. And we are exposed in these animals through gestation, and every single organ is going to be affected somehow. The thing is, are we willing to look at every system? Are we willing to look really deep into each system if they are working properly? Because when you look at these animals, they're normal.
Yeah.
They have four legs, they have two ears, they have two eyes. There's nothing that you can tell. You cannot tell apart the ones that were exposed to BPA and those that were not.
Uh-huh.
But when you start pulling apart the organs and see that these animals, some of them are hopping constantly on the same spot for hours and hours, and then you go and look at the cage card and it says BPA treated with the next dose, that is when you start being more curious and pay even more attention.
When you look at, I didn't understand the
When you look at which type of animal was that was hopping all the time.
Oh, I see.
And you
see
that was the treated animal.
Yeah.
You start paying more and more and more attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Because again, when you look at the mammary glands, they don't look like anything strange. When you look at the, most likely at the liver, you don't see anything macroscopic.
Yeah.
But when you start looking into it, I'm sure you will find something. Well, because as I said before, it's like you have a glass of filled with water.
Yeah.
Beautiful, transparent. And you drop a tiny little amount of black ink. You will see the ink first at the beginning on the surface.
Uh-huh.
But then that cloud will sink in and the whole water will turn gray. And that is what happens with this animal. You drop something, a compound that in this case is called bisphenol A, at the time they were being developed.
And it's pretty minute amounts, is it not, that are inducing these changes in the rats and mice?
Oh, yes, yes. Bisphenol A is regulated here in the U.S. by the Environmental Protection Agency.
EPA, yes.
And it is considered, the EPA considered that a dose of 50 parts per million, it is safe. We are using 2,000 times less.
Really?
And this is what we see.
Oh, my God. Well, then, how well known are your experiments then to the EPA and the scientists in general in the United States, or the biologists or the medical profession?
They are well known. Our studies have been reviewed by all the different panels that are trying to regulate or at looking more seriously at BPA, like the National Toxicology Program or the Food and Drug Administration.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very well known. Sometimes they are not considered useful according to the regulators, but they are very well known.
Now let's just get back to breast cancer. It is, we know, increasing in women, as is prostate cancer.
Yes.
Would you then hypothesize that bisphenol A and phthalates, which you put in plastic to make it more flexible, one of the causes of the increase in breast cancer that we're seeing, Dr. Muffini?
What I am certain is that in 1940s, the incidence of or the likelihood of being diagnosed with breast cancer was of one woman in 22.
One woman in 22?
In 22. And nowadays, it's one in eight.
Really?
Genetics and evolution doesn't work that fast.
No.
So if we start looking at what happened since the 1940s on, you could think that many of these compounds that have a hormone action are actually affecting and increasing the incidence of breast cancer and prostate cancer.
Now, you say many of the compounds. We've only covered two. What other compounds? I know that there are hormone mimickers in detergents, for instance.
Yes.
What other compounds are we exposed to that have hormonal actions?
Very low levels of dioxins, DDT, for instance, in the US, it was
banned.
Yes, thank you. DDT for many, many decades. But when you buy food from other countries where it's still being used, we continue being exposed to DDT. And DDT is an estrogen.
Right.
Endosulfan.
That's a chemical used in agriculture to kill bugs.
Right, mostly for tomatoes. And it was just banned last year in New Zealand. And New Zealand, the people of New Zealand have been fighting very hard to get rid of some of those chemicals that are used to keep those pristine fields for rugby games.
Rugby games?
Yes. But for instance, there are still traces of dioxin. Phthalates, there are so many.
Phthalates?
Yes, there are many. Phthalates is a big family. Parabens, for instance, those are used in sunscreen.
Oh, yeah?
And parabens are also estrogenic.
Are they absorbed through the skin?
Yes.
Why do they use them in sunscreens?
I think it's mostly as a preservative, but I am not 100% sure. Pesticides to cover methoxychlor, for instance.
What's that?
Oh, it's a pesticide.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Atrazine, that is also a pesticide.
So we live in a sort of cocktail of estrogen mimickers, and that is apart from all the other, where, you know, where there are 80,000 chemicals in common use these days,
mm-hmm.
And they have what are called synergistic effects. In other words, one chemical potentiates the effect of another, right? Would you like to talk about that, Dr. Mafini?
Yes, there are. The majority of the studies with what we call mixtures of chemicals were done in vitro, so with cells on plastic dishes.
In vitro means experimental, yeah.
Yes, and all of them showed that the amount of one chemical alone does not account for the sum of all the chemicals together.
Mm.
So there is a much larger effect when many chemicals are together than each chemical in particular. Individually, they may not have an effect because they are used at very, very, very small doses. However, when they are all together, they add up and they have a much stronger estrogenic effect. And we cannot forget the fact that we have normally circulating hormones.
Yeah.
So that goes on top of what we already have in our bodies.
Adds to the hormone levels.
Right.
It seems to me from what you've described, Dr. Mafini, I'm interviewing Dr. Mafini, who is a research assistant professor in the Department of Anatomy and Cellular Biology at Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston. It seems to me from what you've been describing, and it's fairly definitive from what you've been saying, that we're facing a medical and clinical emergency in terms of public health.
I believe so, based on the trends that we see with the higher incidence of chronic diseases and diseases that we are unfortunately becoming too familiar with. If you're in a room with 20 people and you ask them,
yeah,
how many of you know anybody that has cancer?
Yeah.
Everybody, or probably 80% of them, will raise their hand. Either it will be personally touched, or it will be a member, a family member, a friend, or somebody they know or work with. And the same thing with diabetes, with obesity, with heart diseases. There are the trends indicate that there is something that is happening. But I want to give a positive note, that is, there are alternatives for all these compounds. We don't have to have them. There are alternatives to metallic cans to hold food that don't have BPA. There is a very interesting study that was done in Japan in the early 90s when they look at studies at students that drank coffee and tea from cans.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a pretty good amount of bisphenol A in the urine.
Mm.
The company decided to change the composition of the can coating toward a BPA-free compound. And 7 years later, they found almost negligible amount of BPA in the urine. So it does go down. There is there are alternatives that are safer. And the same thing with water bottles, baby bottles. That is the most concerning one.
Yes.
There are other plastic baby bottles that are not made with BPA.
What about pacifiers have it too, don't they? Or they have phthalates?
Not all of them. Some of them are made with polyester.
Mm.
But don't forget the glass bottle.
Well, the glass bottles are okay, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Anything that is glass is fine.
It's fine. What about, and we know that toys, those soft plastic toys contain these things too. So why isn't there more of an outcry, for God's sake? As a pediatrician, it just overwhelms me, the information you've given today. Not that I wasn't kind of aware of it before, but what on earth are the health authorities doing in the medical profession in America in general? Because this is where most of these compounds emanate, and of course they've spread all over the world now.
I think they are being, in the last couple of years, they have been educated by the scientific community.
Yeah.
All our research comes from federal money.
Right.
So we are all independent researchers, paid by with grants,
yes,
by the government.
Yes.
And we are producing all this amount of information, and then we put back into the society. And we discuss these issues with pediatricians, and we discuss these issues with regulators, but that is all we can do. The main concern is with babies, with young children.
Yeah.
And pregnant women. Pregnant women should be advised, as they are advised not to consume tobacco and alcohol, to minimize exposure to things like canned food that we know contains bisphenol A. To minimize eating food from plastic containers. To minimize also drinking from plastic bottles. So we are educating people, and hopefully our message will go out there and will be taken, and we can, you know, move on toward hopefully a more strict regulatory measure that will hopefully ban bisphenol A.
What about normal plastic throwaway glasses that you'd have at a party for wine or stuff like that? Do they contain bisphenol A?
If they are made of PVC, anything that is vinyl has PVC,
yeah,
it will contain BPA most likely.
So, and what about styrofoam cups?
No. Styrofoam, no, but styrofoam is the problem in itself.
Yeah, it's got it excretes benzene, which is a carcinogen.
Yes, and some of the compounds that are used to make styrofoam also have, I think, it's an anti-androgenic effect.
And you can, I always think that when you had hot coffee in a styrofoam cup, it tastes chemical. You can really taste the. The other thing is that we haven't got on to Teflon, which is used in many cooking pans and pots. And now they use, when they wrap hot chips or hot material in paper, or you buy fish,
mm-hmm.
there's white paper, but it's coated with a plastic, and I think that's Teflon. What damage does Teflon do to the body, Dr. Muffini?
Well, I am not specialist on Teflon. What I can tell you is that some of the chemicals used to make Teflon are also hormonally active. Some of those are considered flame retardants.
Yeah, flame retardants in children's clothes and the like.
Right. I mean, flame retardants are used also to protect your furniture, to protect computers from catching fire, from many different sources. They are really in the air. You can breathe them, and we can eat them too. But with some of those flame retardants, what you see is also profound alteration in the mammary gland.
Hmm.
Those animals have a stunted growth of the mammary gland. So they are incapable of feeding their pups. When they get pregnant, they cannot nurse because the mammary gland doesn't develop.
Well, if you sort of look at this the situation from a generic perspective, I have to say, and I'll say this fairly strongly as a pediatrician, that the chemical companies have been negligent, to say the least, and I could use much stronger words. They haven't, on the whole, done the appropriate clinical tests with all these chemicals they've discharged into the environment and our food. You and other scientists are just catching up to see what these chemicals do, and they've absolutely literally saturated our environment with untested toxins, right?
Yes, there are, as you've mentioned before, of those 80,000 chemicals, very few, between 1,000 and 2,000, have been tested.
Only 2,000 have been tested. Yes, because it takes a whole year to test a specific chemical, and I think the EPA only tests about 5 a year for carcinogenicity and toxicity.
The main problem with that is not just the time that it takes,
mm-hmm.
is that those tests are based on classic toxicology. That means that the dose makes the poison.
The dose makes the poison.
The higher the amount,
yeah.
the worse the effect.
Right.
But as I mentioned at the beginning, these chemicals don't work like that. They work like hormones. And we know that for a hormone to have an effect, all you need is a tiny, tiny little signal. And then your breast cells will produce something, or your prostate cells will respond to this very, very small signal. We are baited with hormones constantly.
Yeah, baited.
But our organs are not growing like crazy. So that means that we don't need large amounts of hormones to have an effect. And that is how these chemicals work. We can give 1 gram of BPA to rats, and they will be happy. You don't see anything happening to them.
Ah, that's interesting.
But when you start going down with the doses, is when you start seeing changes.
Ah, that's very interesting. And normal toxicology tests really only test dose, right? The higher the dose, the more toxicity.
Right. And when that assumes that if you don't see an effect at the high dose,
it's not toxic.
You don't see an effect with the low dose.
One last question. We're reaching the end of our time, Dr. Muffini.
Yes.
What do people eat then? What you're really saying is all cans contain bisphenol A, all canned foods, many plastic bottles. What should people eat? Yeah, I mean, canned foods need to be eliminated right at the moment, or avoided?
Well, as I said before, there is a company that produces canned food without BPA.
But does it declare itself? Can you look on the label and see?
I believe so. There are companies here that stop making those reusable water bottles with polycarbonate. Mm. So they are marketing them now with huge labels that said BPA free.
Right.
The same thing with baby bottles. There are plenty that you can find now here in the States that are bisphenol A free.
And
regarding the food, we try to, I'm speaking about myself now.
Yeah.
We try to buy fresh products.
Yes.
And thoroughly wash all your vegetables before you eat them.
Except that they often put wax on the vegetables, so you can't even wash off the chemicals underneath the wax.
That, yes. but, you know, it is, I think, what we have to think is in terms of the people that cannot afford certain things.
Correct, yes.
So it is important, I believe, that this compound, that we can identify it very easily where it is, it should be removed from the market.
Yeah.
And today, something very interesting and positive happened. For the first time in the U.S., a county in Long Island, New York, Suffolk County, had passed a bill banning baby bottles and sippy cups and any containers that are geared toward kids 3 years or younger. That it's banned to contain BPA.
Well, that's significant. That's the beginning of a revolution.
Hopefully.
Well, look, it's been absolutely wonderful to interview you today, Dr. Muffini. It's a subject that has intensely interested me for years and obviously will become more and more interesting to the population at large because of the diseases that seem to be accruing from exposure to these chemicals. And I congratulate you on your pioneering work in the footsteps of your predecessors at Tufts Medical School, who found that phthalates in plastic cause proliferation of breast cancer cells in their experiments. And I wish you luck, and maybe we'll interview you in a year or two to see how your work is proceeding.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and your willingness to interview me.
Yes.
It's been a great pleasure to meet you, even if it is over the phone. I admire your work very much.
Thank you. Maybe we'll do it in the flesh sometime. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest today on If You Love This Planet is Dr. Maricel Muffini, a research assistant professor in the Department of Anatomy and Cellular Biology at Tufts University School of Medicine in Boston. If you are interested in the program today and other programs that we broadcast, please feel free to go to our webpage at ifyoulovethisplanet.org, and there is a page there by which you can donate money to help us proceed with this program, which I think is so very important. We would welcome your contributions and welcome your interest. Thank you. Thank you for listening once again, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.